another week of the Dynamic Duo Show, right here on CCNLive.com. I'm Kevin Barrett. I'm on here every Monday and Friday. Co-host Jim Fetzer comes on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. Well, we have a great show today, all sorts of wonderful, controversial stuff. In the second hour, we're going to be bringing on Annie Higgins and possibly several people who are involved in the Free Gaza movement. That's at freegaza.org. These folks are going to open ferry service between Cyprus and Gaza. They're going to open up the blockade around Gaza. And this is going to be interesting. Hopefully the Israelis will be too ashamed to sink an unarmed ferry coming in from Cyprus full of people from something like 15 or more different countries. So this will be great. It's a project in honor of Riyad Hamad, who was murdered by the Mossad in Austin, Texas last spring. Wayne Madsen has reported that the Mossad killed ex-CIA officer, or actually he was probably still CIA officer, Roland Carnaby, a couple of weeks after they killed Riyad Hamad, in part because Carnaby was on the Riyad Hamad case. Hamad was found floating in Lady Bird Johnson Lake in Austin, bound by duct tape. The Austin police called it suicide. And then Mossad agents, or rather Mossad-infiltrated Austin police officers, did a gangland-style hit on CIA officer Roland Carnaby 2 weeks later. Well, we haven't forgotten you, Riyad Hamad, and we are going to break the blockade of Gaza by sending that ferry in from Cyprus. We'll be talking about that in hour number two. Hour number one is going to be equally exciting because I'm bringing on one of my favorite people in the 9/11 truth movement who is moving on to seeking truth in many, many other areas. No matter how controversial, no matter how apparently out there they sound, she is committed to helping save humanity, and she's going wherever the evidence leads her on that quest. She's just a great person, the director of 9/11 Mysteries. It's my honor to welcome Sophia. How are you, Sophia?
Very well, Kevin. Thank you for that introduction. I don't know about this saving humanity. I can't pretend that I can do that, but I can attempt to inform people.
Well, you're certainly taking on the big issues. You're taking on things like the controlled demolitions of 9/11, which your film 9/11 Mysteries details quite beautifully. And now you're interested in chemtrails and other subjects, all of them indicating that there are some very nasty people with some access to very high technology doing all kinds of things that are just not very good for us.
Well, that's right. And I don't know really what the motivation is if you look at these individuals, if you frame them as people. And that doesn't mean that I'm talking about aliens or anything like that. It's just that we have to try to assess what is in the interest of humanity and what isn't. And what's being done to us, there's no denying that there's a massive operation going on involving this aerosol spraying, which is referred to as chemtrails, and that's a word that has drawn, you know, guffaws from the Air Force and NASA, and that it's been, that's part of the program also. You know, that's what happens to people in 9/11. We're laughed at for thinking that it wasn't a pancake collapse.
Well, of course, we do have so much evidence on our side that we can laugh at the people who try to argue the government's case because they've got nothing whatsoever to stand on. Do you think the same thing is true with chemtrails?
There's a huge amount of evidence. Yes, first of all, visually, the fact that they're changing standards of reference. Years ago, the EPA called good visibility something like 34 miles. That's what you were told. Visibility is good today, 40-mile visibility. Today, we're told it's 10 miles. 10 miles is considered good visibility. And all the references are changing. This is, you know how they say 9/11 was really perception management? Well, that's what this is also. We do not see a blue sky any longer. Our perception of the sky has changed. What we're calling blue is not blue. It's pale white. And yet, you know, people who come from humid climates do look up and see white vapor in the sky. They are used to a white sky, but the telltale reality is coming out here in the west. where you're supposed to have deep cobalt skies on a regular basis, and we don't have it. We have clouds in Phoenix, Arizona. Why? That's a desert. So these are all artificial clouds, and this white is the fallout from the spray.
Well, that's very interesting stuff. Here in Wisconsin, we have a very humid climate in the summer, and it's pretty hard to tell for somebody like me whether the sky looks that much different from how it always did, although I must say that I honestly don't remember seeing these jet exhaust patterns spreading out and persisting the way they sometimes do now. When I was a kid, I remember jet exhaust would be like a little bit of white, and you'd see this tiny plane way up high, maybe a little bit of white. But now I do occasionally see these huge clouds that seem to have been produced by jet exhaust, and I wonder about those. And so I'm very much interested in this topic. Sophia, what do you think is the best source for somebody, say some, you know, academic, critical thinking type who just hasn't looked at this? Where would you send them first?
Well, the most comprehensive work has been done by Clifford Carnicom, and he was with the Department of Forestry, Department of Defense, originally. And you see, that's the thing. A lot of the people, for instance, Rosalind Peterson, worked for the California Department of Agriculture, and she began noticing this tremendous die-off in trees and living things, and that caused her to connect this with the spraying overhead. She doesn't use the word chemtrails. Clifford Carnicom doesn't use the word chemtrails, but that's a popular, you know, term now that's kind of caught on. So Clifford Carnicom's website, carnicom.com, Carnicom. And then I have put up a fairly deep analysis of this, although it's brief, with many, many links, and that has its independent URL, aboutthesky.com. And also, if you can better remember this one, contrailsmyass.com.
Right, and those are both linked at your 9/11 website, 911weknow.com.
Yes, you can find it on 911weknow. But About the Sky will take you there, contrailsmyass, and then I have a links page, and that'll take you to all the chemtrail websites. And there are many. There are sky watch groups now that are being formed in many cities. California has several groups. It has California Sky Watch, started by Rosalind Peterson herself. It has Bakersfield Sky Watch, Los Angeles Sky Watch. There's a very good new website that just came out, and people have been putting together wonderful videos analyzing this stuff. And this particular site is don'tchemtrailmebro.com.
I like that. Yeah. I don't know, being chemtrailed is a little bigger than being tased. Maybe there's a connection there, though, because I know, Sophia, you have argued that the most plausible explanation for this phenomenon is some kind of military program to render the atmosphere an electric conductor. Is that right?
Yes, it's an electromagnetic weapons program, and I know we're going into break, so I'll pick up on the other side.
Okay, we'll be back in a moment to talk some more with Sophia, the director of 9/11 Mysteries, my personal favorite 9/11 film. She's on the web at 911weknow.com. We'll be back to talk with her in a moment.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Barrett. I'm on every Monday and Friday. Jim Fetzer's on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. And today we're having a fascinating conversation with Sophia of 9/11 Mysteries. We're talking about the strange alterations to the atmosphere that are going on. We'll talk a little more about what it is that may be going on, and then on to Sophia's ideas for possible solutions. Where can we go from here if this is really what we think it is? And Sophia, you were just starting to say before the break that these the stuff that the military is putting into the sky appears to have the purpose of making the sky more electrically conductive for the purpose of the use of electronic weaponry.
Right. Now, when you say the stuff that the military is putting, we don't know who's doing this, but certainly we don't have access to the sky. So who does? The military has access. The airlines have access. Maybe others do as well. But regardless, it's not, I don't think it's wise to say the military is doing this. Somebody is doing it. And it is turning the air that we live in into a conductive medium. Air is meant to be neutral and life-supporting, but right now the air is already charged. It's a plasma. The plasma, plasma by definition is a conductive gas, like the inside of a neon light tube. And we are living in that environment, a charged environment, which isn't good for us. And this fallout, you know, these metallic particles that are being sprayed, that are metallic salts, ionized salts, they're falling into the ocean. They're falling onto the soil. So we can't limit our concept to that of it's just in the air. It's everywhere. It's entering our bodies. It's because some of the particles are less than a micron in size. It's permeating the barriers of skin. It's getting past the cilia. It's and they're all embedding themselves within us. So we are being treated or seeded electrically, electromagnetically, and that's what one has to start to comprehend.
So to what extent is this a global phenomenon, and to what extent is it happening more in some countries than others, some regions than others?
Well, they said that it began a spraying of populations in NATO countries, and now they just sprayed in China. July 4th, a friend sent me a picture, China, chemtrails. And you can now see from satellites that the Earth is veiled in this white. And it's not ocean vapor from global warming. It's not nothing to do with climate. This is technology. This is a technological condition that has been added to the ecological equation. So this isn't water. This is when you fly in a plane now and you look down, you see white. You're looking through miles and miles of white. And again, it's not mist, it's not vapor, it's not these harmless things that we tend to construe it as. It's harmful, it's particulate, also polymers, also engineered fungi. There's all kinds of stuff in this mix. So it's a deadly mix.
Engineered fungi? What could possibly be the purpose of that?
I couldn't answer that, you know, with authority, but surgeons are finding odd fungal deposits in people when they open to operate. The fungus isn't natural. The fungus is something other than what we're accustomed to seeing. Now, let me point out that
NASA... My goodness, Sophia.
In
a punk band,
bad.
We played a song called There Is a Fungus Among Us. I turned that into a song about magic mushrooms, but it sounds like this is not the kind of fungus that you necessarily want to have among us.
No. Spores and mold, fungi, desiccated erythrocytes. Now, that's a very complicated-sounding term, but it translates to dried human red blood cells. That is being sprayed on us.
Where are they getting human red blood cells? This is bizarre.
Kevin, your guess is as good as mine. But that's we're being sprayed with that material as well.
You think that's what the plasma donation outfits are really using their donations for?
I don't know. But there are red blood cells, erythrocytes, they're called. Clifford Carnicon's film, Aerosol Crimes, explains this a little bit. He uses the term desiccated erythrocytes, which most people don't understand. We're being altered. This is possibly intended to graft onto our DNA. The genome or genome of every living thing has now been altered. I'm going to be interviewing Lorraine Moray on my own show this Friday.
That's on the Evil Rival Network, RBN, on which I happily cast aspersions since I no longer work there.
Well, okay.
But you have a great show, Sophie. I don't care if you do your show on Fox News. I think it's still going to be a great show.
Well, the day I do a show on Fox News, I'm going to let everybody know.
Okay, I'll publicize it for you, too.
Okay. Some bad stuff is going on. We have to... The questions are huge. What do we do? How do we stop this? It's in us already. What are we going to do? And what I was explaining to you in our own conversation the other day was that electromagnetic weaponry is now the scale on which they are operating. And electromagnetic weaponry, it's not just, you know, warfare. It's alteration of behavior. It's surveillance. It's the re-architecturing, if that's a word, of biology. It can do many, many, many things because now we're going into particles. That's what electrons and neutrons and protons, but it's all about the smallest particles. And they've learned how to engineer on that level. And that, for instance, the immune system cannot locate particles less than a micron in size. The immune system looks for bigger things, cells and bacteria and not these things that are nano-sized. So it knows there's an invader. It looks. It goes into overdrive. It can't find it. And that's why you're ending up with people who have chronic ailments. We have now enormous statistics of chronic disease. And that comes from, the program is ubiquitous. It's coming from vaccines. It's coming from us being sprayed. It's coming from the engineered food. You name it, they're doing it.
Now, my holistic health practitioner has been telling me for quite some time that there is a program afoot to sicken people. She thinks that this is all designed to impede people's health in order to make them more pliable and manipulatable and easy to control. You think
that's probably what's going on? Yes, and so that they're not viable. We won't be able to reproduce. We're being made sterile as well. The body is bulking. It's saying, I can't reproduce. One thing, infertility rates are rocketing, and a lot of people have lifestyle factors to say nothing of. Now I'm looking at outside. It's all gray. Something flew by, some enormous, you know, aircraft, and dropped off more pollution. So there's
I'm not in the mood to reproduce tonight, honey. Okay, we'll be back in a moment. This is Kevin Barrett. I'm talking with Sophia of 911weknow.com, and hopefully we'll get into some spiritual strategies for fighting back against this sort of thing. So stick around.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night.
Commercials are over. The show resumes. I'm Kevin Barrett. I'm doing the Dynamic Duo Show right here on GCNLive.com. And before we leap back into the conversation with Sophia of 911weknow.com, we should mention that there is a show happening tomorrow night with the world's funniest Muslim. That's Azhar Usman. He's going to be on my show on the Evil Rival Network, WTPRN, beginning at 8 o'clock Central Time tomorrow. I'm also going to be featuring Mahbub Khwaja, whose son is being prosecuted for terrorism in Canada, despite all sorts of overwhelming evidence that he is absolutely innocent. So it'll be a good night for Muslims and people who are willing to hear the other side of some of these questions. That'll be on WTPRN.com at 8 p.m. tomorrow night. All right, well, we're talking right now with Sophia, the director of 9/11 Mysteries. And Sophia, you've just outlined a very frightening scenario. You're regarding the alteration of our environment by some sorts of high-tech Frankenstein's monsters, only instead of being big like Frankenstein's monster was, these are tiny, microscopic, nanotech-type particles, partly designed to turn the atmosphere into an electrically conductive medium, presumably to facilitate electronic weaponry.
The alteration, it's not just that they're doing this to our environment. This is to all biological life. And, you know, I was just talking about something flew by. Kevin, there's a fire going on in Southern California where I live now. Suddenly the entire sky is gray and it's drifting in from the east. And this is one of the routine fires that we have. Remember, there were all these fires in Northern California, thousands of lightning strikes, 8,000 in one weekend. That's because they've made a tinderbox out of the medium that we live in. So all they have to do is throw the switch through this HARP, High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, which belts out frequencies, electromagnetic frequencies of different sizes, lengths, however you call them, into the ionosphere, and that sets off what's in the atmosphere, and there we go. That's how we get lightning. The weather is artificial. Everything is artificial, and they're creating these crises around us. They're telling us it's global warming causing this outrageous weather, causing the fires, and everybody, you know, the equation in the simpleton's mind is global warming, fire. Well, okay, that makes sense. But it's all technologically created, and that leads to this Agenda 21, this enormous document that's been prepared for decades, which is about really controlling our existence through what they call crisis management, smart growth, and they put the face of progress on it. And this is how the common man and people in all different countries are going to buy it, because we've been told that now there are forces that affect all of us in every country. Therefore, we have to all get together and figure out what we're going to do. Yet we're not told that the forces themselves are engineered.
So this is part of a push towards global government. Many people have studied this question of global elites manipulating world events towards the establishment of a kind of totalitarian world government. Of course, Alex Jones is famous for that. And lots of other people are starting to wake up and realize that he's onto something. Do you think that that's the objective? They're trying to impose a world government by way of all of these artificial crises?
Yes, it is the objective, at the very least. It, you know, bigger than that is they're achieving complete control of everything that's living. We are going to be melded with basically machines, just minute machine technology. Nanotechnology is the control of particles less than a micron in size. So they are. I'm smelling the smoke. Now there's a fire. I'm going to keep. Hopefully, I don't have to evacuate while I'm on this show. All right.
Wow. Well, so I guess you're right in the middle of the kind of stuff you're talking about, even as
yes.
we speak. You know, just last
yes.
month when I was on the way back from the Media Reform Conference in Minneapolis with a couple of friends, we went through those massive thunderstorms that were hitting my district of Wisconsin at that time, and which caused bigger than 100-year floods in many places, including 10 feet over the 100-year flood mark in Iowa. So these storms were just outrageous, unworldly. You know, I've never seen storms like that before. And there was one lightning strike that was maybe 100 feet from our car, and it was bizarre. I've never seen a lightning strike like this. It looked more like some kind of a high-tech weapon strike than a normal lightning strike. It's hard to describe, but there were flames shooting out around it in a way that, I mean, I've never seen a lightning strike like this before. Anyway, so, you know, I guess maybe we're starting to get some first-hand experience of some of these things. And by the way, let me know if you have to evacuate while I'm in the middle of a monologue.
Well, I mean, I'm smelling smoke, and that's happened before. The wildfires of October here were unusual in that they resulted in the evacuation of 200,000 to 300,000 people in North County, San Diego. And many have said that the winds that generated the fires were completely unnatural, whirling dervish Santa Anas, and normally the Santa Anas are winds that blow from the desert regions to the east, and they blow in a wall, then we would not have wind 10 miles south, you know? So none of this made any sense to anyone. But people cannot explain why something that seems like weather, why it feels unnatural. They can't really put it any place else. So they are stuck. They have to say, well, it happened. There was lightning, you know, that remained over my house for 4 hours straight. Now, that's not normal lightning. And where that's coming from, we can only guess. But what we have to do is to start using our perception, to stop allowing our perception to be managed, to stop accepting pat explanations for things, like this is a thunderstorm. No, it looks and sounds in some ways like a thunderstorm, but in other ways it's not a natural storm. And when people start really using their senses, because that ability is being taken from us, they are effectively contracting our experience, our vision, our sensibilities of what is going on around us. And we're giving all that up. We can no longer taste because the food they give us doesn't have any taste. So now we couldn't tell you if something tasted like a tomato or it didn't, because we've forgotten what a tomato tastes like. We've forgotten what the blue sky tastes like. We've forgotten how you can count, remember, Kevin, between the lightning and the thunder. And as the storm approaches and recedes, you actually have differences in those seconds that you're counting. That doesn't happen anymore. Storms don't behave
yeah.
like that.
Well, you know, my wife thinks that Americans lost the ability to taste food a long time ago. At least that's what she says about some folks that she's met here. But she, you know, she's kind of a gourmet chef who makes Moroccan and Mediterranean food. And of course, there are exceptions that prove the rule. But interesting, you know, it's all very interesting stuff to me. I guess the bottom line is, well, what are we going to do about this? I know that my wife says that you can plant yarrow around your house to protect against electromagnetic radiation. And in fact, I did this without even knowing that. I've been putting yarrow all around my house. And then my wife just recently told me that that's a good thing, and especially because we have a power line going right by, and that is helping protect us from EMF. Besides planting yarrow stalks, or rather yarrow plants, what do you think we can be doing?
Well, that we have to invent what we're going to do. This exceeds the three-dimensional world. What are we going to do to strategize to get stuff in the air to stop this? Do we have planes to counter theirs? No. So we have to come up with something utterly different. And I'll try to get into that on the other side of this break.
Okay, coming up, and now for something completely different with Sophia from 9/11 Mysteries. Her website is 911weknow.com. And we'll be talking with her more in a few moments. We'll be right back. Kevin Barrett, you're listening to the Dynamic Duo Show right here on GCNLive.com. I'm talking with Sophia of 9/11 Mysteries. And before we quickly get to the solutions to this dilemma that she's been sketching out for us, there's going to be an impeachment hearing in Congress, only it's going under another name. It's called Executive Power and Its Constitutional Limitations. It's going to be in the Judiciary Committee. John Conyers is holding this conference. He's too wimpy to call it an impeachment event. And right now, we're urging you to call C-SPAN to urge them to cover this event. It will be happening Friday. Again, it's called Executive Power and Its Constitutional Limitations. And you can call 202-737-3220. That's 202-737-3220. To cover Friday's House Judiciary Committee hearing on executive power and its constitutional limitations. A whole bunch of speakers will be there calling for impeachment. And I'll tell you something. I hear that Bob Barr, the Libertarian presidential candidate, is going to be there opposing impeachment. If that's true, I, as a Libertarian candidate for Congress, will be publicly getting on his case. I'm planning on voting for Cynthia McKinney anyway. She's the true 9/11 truth, justice, pro-Constitution candidate. But if Bob Barr comes out against impeachment, then, you know, all bets are off. I don't even know if I'll be able to support him at all. Anyway, we are back with Sophia talking about solutions to the global, what do we call it, the biology, electronic biology crisis that's going on. Sophia, how can we respond to this situation that you've been describing throughout the show?
Well, first we have to know about it. Then we have to talk about it. Because that's the beginning of consciousness. That's the beginning of awakening. And, you know, I wouldn't be glib about saying, oh, well, Sophia's going to give us solutions. I don't have solutions, Kevin. This is so big. I am so minuscule compared to this. But I do know that electromagnetic technology is, let's just call it their weapon, their system, their program that they're using. And that's, we have plenty of evidence of that. So what is our equivalent? What do we have within us that's as powerful as that, that we haven't tapped yet? It's our consciousness. And we can do things. The New Age literature and books are full of people creating opportunities in their lives. And that's what I'm talking about. Our ability to create from a part of self that we don't really put much faith in. We have given that power away. So let's just call, for argument's sake, our consciousness the equivalent of their electromagnetism. Our consciousness is electromagnetic. It is waves. It is frequencies just like they have and are using. So we have to figure out how to use our consciousness in that super creative way. And we can do it the same way the mother lifts the VW off her trapped child, the same way we do these magical things from time to time in our lives, and we say, how is that possible? I don't know. Some people say God did it for them or came through. It was Jesus. However you want to explain it, we were the instrument of something fantastic, and we're going to have to start doing this on a basis that will present a new level of operating for us so that what they're creating isn't part of our world. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, it kind of does. The idea of mind over matter, or the hidden power of consciousness, is one that I enthusiastically embrace. There are theoretical explanations for this, but, you know, I've seen enough personal evidence that this is real. The evidence for the existence of psi forces in human consciousness is quite strong, as the very straight-laced empiricist Encyclopedia of Philosophy tells us in an article they published back in the 60s that there's just overwhelming evidence that people do have psi powers and that consciousness has a direct influence on material reality. And so some of the discussions of how this could be possible go into quantum mechanics. There's a great book by a physicist named Casey Blood. What's that called? Anyway, just Google Casey Blood, and you can hear a little bit about his version of how this can happen. And there, if you want to read about the evidence for mind over matter, or for a consciousness directly affecting reality, there's another great book out called The Conscious Universe by Dean Radin, R-A-D-I-N. So I think that you're barking up the right tree here, Sophia. And how can people get in touch with those deeper and more powerful parts of our consciousness?
That's going to have to be the individual's journey. But first of all, you have to stop believing you're helpless and there's nothing you can do and you're going to just march in step with this transformation, because that's what it is. We're being ushered into complete transformation. And we must know about it to start with. You can't respond in any way, consciously or otherwise, if you don't even know. So the first step is to know about it. The second step is to communicate about this. And the third step, as we become communicators and aware of this, we are immediately transforming the status quo. We are generating change just by changing in that way ourselves. And there will be an organic effect resulting from this. Somebody used the analogy of a tree. The tree is the tree because it has all these leaves on it, and we have to become full leaf in every possible way so that the tree can grow out of us. And I don't know how to explain it any more than that, but we have to be the change by stepping into it and stepping out of fear. So it's really about fear also.
Absolutely, and that's one of the great things about 9/11 Truth. Unlike most political movements, once people wake up to 9/11 and start talking about it, they have to break through a real big fear barrier. And I suppose this would be true with Chemtrail Truth as well, breaking through the fear barrier and getting into a state where, well, they can do what they want to me. I feel deep inside that I'm confident in my own being, that I will be okay and at peace with the universe no matter what happens. And that's a really wonderful kind of thing to go through. And here's a political cause that actually can help you go through it.
Yeah. I mean, this is our reality. We can't pretend it's not happening. I'm looking at fire now outside, and I don't know what they're going to tell me. I'm on this show, so I haven't been able to find out, but possibly there are loads of fires all over the place. And they're making disaster, weather terrorism, a part of our lives, and they're telling us it's global warming, and it's not global warming. It's not. It's their work, and we have to stand up and say we know what this is. But if we just accept these paradigms that they keep selling to us, and we start, you know, green and recycling because we have to do it because there are too many of us, we're all marching right into their language. And this is language that has been created for us to speak ourselves, and we're speaking it.
Well, that's a pretty sneaky strategy then, if they're corralling the people who are leaning towards being critical thinkers and people who are, you know, outside the box and criticizing the paradigm. And those are the very people, the progressive, the leftists, and so on, who are being corralled into this kind of global warming army of lemmings. That's a very scary kind of thing, a scary kind of strategy to even imagine doing. But, wow. Well, Sophia, thank you. It's been a real eye-opening conversation, as always. I appreciate your great work.
All right. Well, thank you, Kevin, for this opportunity.
Okay, and people can find out more information at your website, 911weknow.com.
And aboutthesky.com.
Aboutthesky.com, also known as contrailsmyass.com. Are we allowed to say three-letter words on the air?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, thanks, Sophie. I'll hopefully talk to you again soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. We'll be back in the second hour with folks who are going to break the blockade on the Gaza Strip by sailing a ferry service over from Cyprus, one of the most exciting projects I've heard of recently. So stick around and you'll hear more about that right here on Dynamic Duo. Welcome back to the second hour of today's exciting Dynamic Duo show right here on GCNLive.com. I'm Kevin Barrett. I'm on here every Monday and Friday. Co-host Jim Fetzer comes on Tuesdays through Thursdays. And in the second hour today, we're going to be returning to a subject that I treated a little bit last spring. I remember getting that email from John of Progressive Press detailing the murder of Lebanese-born Palestinian activist Riyad Hamad, who was found floating in Lady Bird Johnson Lake in Austin, bound by duct tape. And the Austin police called it a suicide. Riyad Hamad had embarrassed the powers that be, and specifically the neoconservatives, or the Zionists, as some would point out as their real loyalty, by going after them in court and prevailing. And they, since they couldn't get to him legally, apparently they had to take him out. And since I did that show and a follow-up show last spring, new information has come to light from Wayne Madsen. He's a former National Security Agency officer and is currently the premier conduit for inside information from national security whistleblowers. And Wayne Madsen has reported that CIA officer Roland Carnaby, who was hunted down like a dog and murdered by Houston police officers who, according to Madsen, appear to have been in the pay of Mossad, their corrupt, turned police officers who just chased him down and shot him point blank. This may have been related to the Riyad Hamad killing, in which Mossad is also a leading suspect. Carnaby apparently had discovered information linking Mossad to Riyad Hamad's murder. All of this information is available at Wayne Madsen Reports. And today we're going to be talking about this great project that Riyad Hamad was involved with and was maybe the leading promoter of, and that is the Break the Blockade Ferry to Gaza Strip project. And guess what? It's happening, folks. It's on. It's alive. Riyad's memory is being honored. And my guest today will be talking about that. One guest is my old friend Annie Higgins. She is a fellow Arabic professor. Well, I'm not currently teaching, but I think Annie is. And she's well known for her work with the Palestinian people. And also, we're proud to have with us Darlene Wallach, who, as I understand it, is perhaps actually going to be on this boat that will be sailing from Cyprus to Gaza on August 5th. Inshallah. So, hey, welcome. Welcome both of you, Darlene and Annie Higgins. How are you doing?
Thank you. I'm doing well.
Thank you.
Hey, great to have you. So, Darlene, is this information right? You're actually planning on being on board the boat from Cyprus to Gaza that's leaving on August 5th?
Yes, I am. I'm actually leaving. I live in California, and I'm leaving the 28th. My twin sister just left this morning for Cyprus, and I'm leaving on the following Monday. So, I'll be there, be on the boat, and I'm so excited I can't even sleep at night anymore. So,
It is an amazing project, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's really inspirational, and my hope is that this inspires people all over the world to come up with their creative, nonviolent resistance actions to break the siege of Gaza and bring the power of the people against the oppressive occupation that Israel is perpetrating on the Palestinians.
All right.
I have to give a shout out and a hello to Darlene because
hey Annie,
hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Alhamdulillah. The last time I saw Darlene, actually, Kevin, was it was in Palestine, in Jerusalem, in an Israeli court. She had been arrested along with a number of other ISM, International Solidarity Movement volunteers, in Balata refugee camp. I had been in a different part of the camp at the time, so they did not get me. But I went to Darlene's trial, and boy, that was sort of an unusual experience. But I mean, I don't think the translators were even really translating very well from the Hebrew. And I met there several Israeli activists, women who actually have helped me since then as I've come into Palestine. Anyway, we've been sort of out of touch, and I'm just thrilled to see Darlene again on the phone, and
yeah.
I'm thrilled to see Darlene going back to Palestine. This is just so exciting. It is so exciting. It's revolutionary. It's revolutionary, but at the same time, in a way, it's natural.
Yeah.
Why shouldn't we, and in this case you, be doing something like this? Just going, doing something very ordinary. You take a boat into a port. You know, in a way, it's just a very, very ordinary action. It's the politics that have been built around it that, make it into an extraordinary action. But it's fantastic, and bravo aleiki. I'm so proud. I'm so proud.
Yeah.
Well, the Gaza Strip, of course, is a coast on the coast of the Mediterranean. The strip of coastline, you would think it would be open to the world, and yet it's been blockaded by the Israeli forces. And so this idea of breaking the blockade with a peaceful ferry boat from Cyprus, It's a brilliant idea, and I guess, to what extent, Darlene, is this inspired by the memory of Riyad Hamad?
Well, actually, this had been going on before Riyad died, and he was doing things, working with the project, helping us out. So he had some significant role working with us. But there was four people who came up with this creative idea a number of years ago, and we've been solidly working on it for about 2 years now. But a group of people, if you look at the website, it kind of talks about the history of it. But a group of people came up with this idea of, like, what could we do? Because people had tried to go to a conference, nonviolent human rights workers, and they were barred from entering Israel to get into Palestine. And so they said, we got to protest this. We got to do something because it's not up to Israel to say we can't go to Palestine. It's up for the Palestinians to say they don't want us in. So they came up with this idea of, well, we can't go in by air. We can't go in by land. Let's go in by sea.
That's great.
Right?
This sort of reminds me of one if by land, two if by sea thing.
Right. So it was just very, very creative. And we had to, actually, we were planning on leaving a year ago, but we didn't have the funds. And then we were going to leave in the fall, and we still didn't have the funds. And we put it off to May and still didn't have the funds. And now we're going, but we still need funds. So if there's people out there who would like to contribute, any amount would be very welcome, appreciated, and needed. So if they go
www.freegaza.org.
Right, and there's a donate button, and there's different ways that they can donate, including if they'd prefer to send a check. It has an address of where to send the check to, and they'd make it out to the Free Gaza Movement. And it's a 501c3, so for people in the United States, it's a tax-deductible donation.
Okay.
So
freegaza.org.
Right, and there's information there. And there we're also accepting loans, and it talks about what to do, how to make the check out if you want to make a loan. But the loan would have to be at least $1,000. So if people would want to make an investment as a loan, and when we sell the boat, they get their money back. And if the money doesn't come back, then that would be then a donation. So it would be the 501c3 donation then. So it's all on the website. And I'm hoping people go look at that. If people want to follow us along, they can sign up on an email list. So that will get started once we take off. And then they could follow and see what's going on. And hopefully people will be asking the media to follow what's going on and keep a lot of attention on us. Let's bring the world's attention to what's going on in Gaza. It's unconscionable.
Well, we better keep the world's attention on the boat just to make sure the Israelis don't try to do anything to it like they did to the USS Liberty back in 1967.
Right. Absolutely.
Right. All right, we'll be back in a few moments. I'm Kevin Barrett. This is the Dynamic Duo Show. And I'm speaking with Annie and Darlene. We're talking about freegaza.org. And check out that website. Donate if you can. And feel free to call in. We'll give you the call-in number when we come back. Stick around.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey Jude, don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better. Remember to let her into your heart. Then you can start to make it better. Hey,
welcome back
Jude,
to the Dynamic Duo Show. I'm Kevin Barrett. I'm on every Monday and Friday right here at GCNlive.com. Today I'm talking with Darlene Wallach and Annie Higgins. Annie's an Arabic professor, which is what I trained to be before I became a talk radio host. And Darlene is a pro-Palestine activist who is going to be boarding the first ever Gaza ferry, which is going to be departing from Cyprus and heading for Gaza in early August. And people can help out by going to freegaza.org. We do have a caller. It's Margareta. Come on in, Margareta. How's it going?
Hello.
Hey, hello.
Can you hear me?
We sure can.
Oh, thank you so much. I wanted to thank the women who are involved in organizing this incredibly courageous journey. And I wonder to what extent they feel that this is going to have an impact on the Israeli government, whether it can muster international attention or put pressure on the Israelis in any way. Do they feel that, how do they feel that it is actually going to have an impact?
Well, this is Darlene speaking, and my thoughts on that are the only time we've ever had change in the world, and especially here in the United States, is from people demanding it. And as we've seen that governments are doing nothing to end the siege of Gaza, which is unconscionable. Over 200 people have died that have needed medical care and can't get it. And and so this situation there is a humanitarian crisis, and there's no need for it. So since governments are not doing anything, it's up to us, the people, to do what we can to force this to end. And I think we're going to have a very big effect, especially if people are looking at us and watching and asking the media to cover it and asking questions about, you know, to their political, you know, representatives, if you want to call them that. And it'll, you know, maybe inspire people throughout the world to take similar kinds of actions. And that's the only way we've ever had change in the world is the people, not from government.
Are you going to contact the international media, at least Al Jazeera, and
They know about it.
Uh-huh.
The international media does know about it. We're going to have media on the boats with us.
Uh-huh.
They've been notified. We notified the media a long time ago, just like Israel knows what we're doing.
Uh-huh.
And our government knows.
I think, in a way, I think we can say that this project has already been successful because it has drawn the attention of the Israeli government and of media. And if you look on the website, freegaza.org, there's a little advertisement which was actually developed. It was developed and paid for by someone who was supporting this movement and taking the ferry into Gaza. And then Al Jazeera promised that they would run it. They were going to run it for a certain amount of time all throughout, I mean, forever, the Arab world, America, they broadcast everywhere. And because they were
out.
So successful, Paul LaRudy was here the other night in Chicago. I'm in Chicago now. And he told us, he was mentioning what happened then. They went through all kinds of machinations, Al Jazeera did, until finally they just said, okay, we're not going to do it. And one of the interpretation that Paul LaRudy, who is one of the leaders of this...
He's one of the co-founders.
One of the co-founders. Okay,
yes.
Thank you. Was that... And nobody... Okay. That they pulled out because, for instance, and he wrote a letter to the Jazeera people and tried to get it published by others recently, that Israel can really close down media. It can close down media such as Al Jazeera, and apparently they did it to BBC, which I didn't realize. But some time ago, BBC was shut down for 6 months from reporting from Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently Jazeera felt, okay, if they are so concerned about this little, I don't know, it was 20 or 30 second ad at the
right.
most,
yeah.
Then, you know, Al Jazeera will not do it. And instead they'll continue their capability to broadcast from Gaza. But I think that in itself shows the success. This has already had an impact.
If you want to see the ad, go to the website.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and I'm
more important
to the website, and I really admire what you're doing.
The ad plays on the website. It plays in Arabic, and then if you want, you can push a button and it'll play in English.
Yeah. I think our friend's point is, in a way, it's a great ad, but how are we getting it? Because with someone like Jazeera shutting it down.
Right. Because that would have really gotten out to a big part of the world.
Yeah, it's too bad we can't put pressure on Al Jazeera from
right,
their audience
yeah.
to broadcast it.
Right.
Well,
and
all the other
TV stations that they approached, none of them would air the ad. Besides Al Jazeera, all the other Arab media, none of them would air it.
That's amazing. You know, what we hear over here is that the Arab media is also biased against Israel and America and all this nonsense. And they're afraid to even air an ad for a nonviolent ferry boat going from Cyprus to Gaza. I mean, this is pathetic, folks. Maybe we need honest Arab media network somewhere.
It's worse than pathetic, and it's not just Arab media. It's a global media, and I think it really has to be challenged because we do have corporate media. And we don't think of Al Jazeera as being Fox News or CNN. And for it to shut down in this way is to say that the Palestinian issue and the Gaza issue is profoundly important because those people are suffering tremendously.
Yeah.
And for Israel not to be charged in the International Court of, you know, the World Court for
yeah.
crimes against humanity
right.
is something that should happen. And I wonder, and, you know, I'm not sure how you are going to convey this, but I do think that it's important that somehow you get either international observers to accompany you or notified
the
United
States. We are people from 16 different countries. We are international
Wonderful.
Observers.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Are you carrying food? Are you carrying medicine?
No. We can't carry enough food for 1.5 million people.
Uh-huh.
We're going to be taking some hearing aids for the Ataluna Deaf Children Society.
Wonderful.
But it's just a small amount that, you know, because it doesn't take up a lot of room, hearing aids.
Right.
And we're on
right.
two small boats. So,
right.
you know, space is at a premium.
Right.
So that's,
right.
But we're not on a humanitarian aid mission. We're on
yes.
a human rights mission.
Yes.
The Palestinians
yes.
should have their sovereignty. They should have the right to drinking water. They should have the right to food. They have a right to enter and leave their country at any time. These are human rights. This is the Declaration of Human Rights. These are international rights that are afforded to all human beings, and it should not be denied the Palestinians.
Well, you guys are actually enforcing international law. I have asked Francis Boyle on my show. He's an international law attorney and a human rights specialist, a professor at U of Illinois.
Yes.
And he has said that people who do actions like this, even when they're breaking a law, which you guys really aren't, but
right.
even if you were breaking a law to do this, you would be the enforcers. You would
right.
be the people on the side of justice and the law, and you would be working against the criminals.
The Nuremberg Principle.
That's right. The occupation is criminal. We'll be yeah. back in a moment. This is Kevin Barrett here on GCNLive.com. I'm talking to Annie Higgins and Darlene Wallach about FreeGaza.org and it's breaking the blockade of Gaza. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Well, search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Don't you know that you can count me out? Don't you know it's gonna be alright? Alright. Alright.
Welcome back to the Dynamic Duo Show right here on GCNLive.com. I'm Kevin Barrett. Today we're talking about breaking the siege of Gaza with Annie Higgins and Darlene Wallach. And, you know, I think that the things that the mainstream media will not report about Israel tells us a whole lot about which stories are really threatening to the Zionist state. For example, when Chris Hedges wrote that article for Harper's Magazine detailing how he had actually personally witnessed Israeli soldiers, quote, luring Palestinian children into the range of their guns and shooting them for sport.
Yes.
He was castigated, and he ended up losing his job at the New York Times. He's continued doing great work ever since, of course. But that story is not one that the Israeli authorities have allowed to be widely disseminated in the Western media. Likewise, the article in British Medical Journal detailing how something like 600-plus Palestinian children had been intentionally murdered by Israeli snipers in schoolyards, on sidewalks, walking to and from their homes. These, as the article put it, all bear the mark of the sniper shot, you know, right between the shoulders kind of things, right through the head. It's clear that the IDF, the Israeli military, shoots Palestinian children for sport. This is a subject that the mainstream media is not allowed to report. And, of course, the Israeli spies who were filming and celebrating the destruction of the Twin Towers on 9/11, which has been very reliably reported and confirmed. It was even reported by Fox News, of all places.
Right.
Of course, they're not always reliable, but in this case, apparently they were. That story is way too hot to handle, and Fox was forced to pull that story from their website just a couple of days after they broadcast it. These are stories that are really threatening to Israel, and they can't stop everything. Just, you know, Information Clearinghouse just posted this story of a video of an Israeli soldier shooting a handcuffed and blindfolded
right.
Palestinian prisoner.
Yes.
That did make Al Jazeera. So I guess the Israelis can let us watch stuff like that once in a while. But it's interesting that they are not going to let us realize that your peaceful ship is going to be sailing from Cyprus on August 5th to break the blockade of Gaza.
Right.
But that's why we're especially grateful to people like you, Kevin. And
right.
When Paul Larudi was here the other night, and I just mentioned, okay, a couple of sites, and I know that Darlene, you and others and Paul have been on a number of media outlets. But as you say, Kevin, and as our caller Margarita pointed out before, I mean, these are things that are just far too hot for mainstream and even not so mainstream media to handle. Because, by the way, when Paul wrote a letter, he wrote a letter to Al Jazeera saying, I understand totally that you can't do this because if you do this, you know, probably the Israeli authorities will just shut you down from any reporting and you don't want to take that risk. But he sent that very letter to a number of not so mainstream places like Counterpunch, and several others, and they wouldn't even print it.
I thought Counterpunch did cover it.
Well, they wouldn't cover Paul's letter to Jazeera saying, you know, they did cover some stuff about the boat. But they wouldn't print Paul's letter to Jazeera saying, we know why it is that you won't do our little 30-second spot. So, you know, I don't know why in every case things are so hot to handle, but I'm grateful for people like you who get the word out. And, of course, as we sort of go to the websites that we know, we listen to the radio shows we know. So it's true, we need to find a way to jump over that barrier. But I think the more that there are shows like yours bringing this out, Kevin, you know, little things will seep through. So thank you.
Yes, thank you very much.
Well, no problem. And in fact, if anybody wants to put an ad about this on a local Wisconsin TV station, I am running for Congress here in Wisconsin, and they are not allowed to refuse advertising from a candidate, and they have no control whatsoever over the content of candidates' advertising. So I can put any advertisement I want on television and radio here in western Wisconsin. So if anybody wants something like this on the airwaves in western Wisconsin, just contact me by way of my website, barrettforcongress.us, and we'll talk about what we can get on the air here. I realize that probably western Wisconsin isn't necessarily your target market for the Break the Blockade
Why
of Gaza
not?
Campaign.
You know, but wherever, it doesn't matter, wherever it can go, it's getting the word out to people. People will see it, and they may go look at the website and get informed and want to contribute.
Well, I'll link it at my website.
I'm
one of the very few congressional candidates to take a forthright anti-Zionist position. This is pretty much heresy in today's America. You know, you're allowed to weep and wail a little bit over the plight of the poor Palestinian people, but you're not allowed to be forthrightly anti-Zionist in polite society in the U.S. today. And I'm seeing how far I can push breaking that taboo by saying, look, I'm with the Palestinians. I don't think there ever should have been a Jewish state created in Palestine.
Right.
And I think it needs to be ended as soon as possible, peacefully if
Thank
possible,
you.
But by whatever means necessary.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yes.
Amazing. You're leading the way. Actually,
thank you very much for taking that stand.
Yeah, I tell you.
I'm not getting any APAC money.
There you go. Paul the other night was talking about this very issue of Palestine, the name Palestine, and he referred to what you just said, Kevin, about a Jewish state in Palestine, which is, if you look at the original documents, creating the state of Israel. That's exactly the phrase that is used, a Jewish state in Palestine. And Paul points out, and I think that he has a very good point, that that area is Palestine. And historically it is. You can go back to the Romans and, I don't know, maybe before, that it's Palestine. So the West Bank is Palestine. Gaza is Palestine. And
all
Israel,
Palestine.
Where the state of Israel is also Palestine.
Yes.
So, many people like to use this. There you go. Many people like to use this phrase, Israel/Palestine. And he was pointing out that really, it's Palestine. Darlene, take it away, as you're saying.
Yes, it's occupied Palestine, all of it. It's, and to me, and I'm Jewish, by the way, I just find it reprehensible. It's just like the Nazis. Why would Jews be superior to any other group of people on earth? And why would Jews need a special place for them to live? That is just disgusting, and it doesn't make Jews safer to be there.
Well, it's quite the opposite. This whole idea of trying to push all of the world's Jewish population into a tiny little area surrounded by people who hate them is
No, that's a lie. That's a lie to say that everyone hates them.
The creation of Israel created enmity, and the idea of putting the world's Jews into a situation where they're the object.
But they're not. It's not so that they're surrounded by people that hate them. Because I've talked to Palestinians. Palestinians do not hate Jews. What they want is what's right. They want what their land. They want equal treatment. They want jobs and health care and everything else that any human being wants. They don't. They're not saying, "Oh, all the Jews have to leave." They're not saying that at all.
Well, what I meant really was the sort of geostrategic level where the countries surrounding Israel have a problem with Israel, and this is not good for the Israeli people, whether they're Jewish or Arab, and it's not good for the world's Jews either, or for anyone else.
Right. And the problem is, it's not the Jews that are the problem. The problem is the Zionists and their ideology. And from the get-go, the idea of what this was about, when the Zionists first started this whole movement, what it was about was expulsions of the Palestinians from the start. And I highly recommend that people read The Ethnic Cleansing of Palestine by Ilan Pappé.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Ilan Pappé's work is great. I haven't read that book yet, but
it's
I look forward
book.
To it.
Great book, yeah.
Thanks for the recommendation. We'll be back to pick this up in a moment. This is Kevin Durick with Darlene Wallach and Annie Higgins right here at the Dynamic Duo Show on GCN Live.
Radio.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help. When I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help in any way.
Welcome back to the Dynamic Duo Show right here on GCNLive.com. I'm Kevin Barrett, and this hour I'm talking with Annie Higgins, an Arabic professor, and Darlene Wallach, who will be leaving to help break the blockade of Gaza, leaving from Cyprus on a boat heading for Gaza on August 5th. And the media, well, most of the media apparently will not be paying as much attention as they should be paying, and so maybe we can find a way to try to change that by spreading the word through the Internet, which they haven't yet managed to get completely under their control, maybe writing letters to the editors of various papers.
If somebody
wants to throw some money at the Barrett for Congress campaign, I'd be happy to put a commercial on Wisconsin television about this. That's kind of a long shot. Have you tried informing the Press TV people out of Iran and or the Al-Manar Hezbollah TV network in Lebanon, because I mean, neither of those sources have that much love lost for Israel.
I know that a lot of media has been contacted. I'm not sure about those particular ones. Al Manara sounds like it might have been, but I'm not positive of all the media that's been informed of this. But the word has gone out, and because they have people from 16 different countries, they've been letting their media know too.
Press TV would be a good bet. Press TV does English language work, and
what's the name of it?
Press TV.
Press TV.
Yeah, they sometimes cover things that other places won't cover.
They're
out of Iran.
Okay.
And Asia Times, and there's also a Russian. Is it Pravda? One of the Russian papers that has English.
Right, the Pravda English paper also covers things that you'll never see covered in Western media, including a little bit of 9/11 truth every now and then.
I was wondering if I could go over our four missions, our 4 points in our mission.
Please do.
Okay, so number one, we want to open Gaza to unrestricted international access. That is to say, Palestinian sovereignty. Number two, to demonstrate that Israel still occupies Gaza despite its claims to the contrary. Number three, to show international solidarity with the people of Gaza and the rest of Palestine. And number four, to demonstrate the potential of nonviolent resistance methods. And I'm just hoping that people keep in mind what this is about. And,
That's great. Those are wonderful points. And I think the nonviolent resistance part is maybe the best of all because, you know, I've been thinking for years, even though theoretically I can see why people in Palestine use violent methods to resist the destruction of their country, it seems to me that nonviolent resistance has all sorts of possibilities that haven't been fully explored yet. And something like this that has the potential to really draw the attention of the world, if we make it happen, could help build this movement for high visibility, nonviolent methods in Palestine. And of course, that's what really helped change things in South Africa.
Right. But you need to know that most of the, you know, like very small percentage of violence comes from Palestinians. 99.99999% of what Palestinians do is resist the occupation in a nonviolent method, mostly just by trying to live their day-to-day lives. But if you look at what's going on in I'm going to mispronounce it, Nilin and Bilin, and look at what's going on there, and even in Gaza, the people just struggling to live their daily lives. All you hear about, you don't hear about what Palestinians live through and how they're human beings and kind and generous and loving, right? You don't hear about their hospitality.
You don't even hear about their nonviolent resistance and
protest,
right, which, as you said, is 99% of what they're doing.
That's right.
And that suggests that, again, the reason that this story is being blacked out, that Israel is twisting arms to make sure that even Al Jazeera can't run your ad, is because the Israelis are afraid of nonviolent resistance. They actually prefer the suicide bombings and things like that because then they can demonize the Palestinians.
Well, and they always provoke it.
Right.
And they do something because they know they'll get a reaction, and they know if they do enough things, because Hamas has had a ceasefire. They had it for 3 years, and Israel still was going in and violently killing people in Gaza on a daily basis. Right? And
right,
it hasn't stopped the building of the wall. It hasn't stopped the demolition of houses and agriculture anywhere. So
right,
no matter what the Palestinians do, right, when they have nonviolent resistance, when they have ceasefires, it doesn't stop Israel's violence of and killing and maiming of human beings and devastation of their homes and livelihoods.
Right. With nonviolent resistance, you have to do it in such a way that they can't ignore it. And it takes a real kind of critical mass or a really mediagenic kind of event. I think you're breaking the blockade from Cyprus in a boat is, you know, it has potential to be that kind of event that they can't resist covering. But that's, you know, history of nonviolent resistance really shows that there's kind of a critical mass that you have to reach before they'll pay attention.
Really, when you are there in Palestine, you see that you're not, that critical mass is not allowed to get together. I mean, this is part of the thing of the roadblocks. It's part of continually invading refugee camps and continually attacking and shooting into schools. These things are done all the time to intimidate people and to keep any kind of group action from taking place. And also regarding the media, I mean, there are quite a few Palestinian, not only Palestinian, but especially Palestinian journalists and photojournalists especially, who have been attacked more than once, and some killed, and then some have managed to live miraculously. As you say, it's probably because this is so dangerous. If people were allowed to see what Palestinians really are, this would be dangerous. Israel could no longer go after them like this and make these claims on the land. But I think, I've seen these ideas before that Palestinians should all get together and take a big walk. Well, I mean, you try to take a walk to school. I know a family where a six-year-old child was killed just walking to school. Another where the fourth-grade girl was shot in her classroom. I mean, you just, as Darlene was saying, resistance is really just existence. Just by living your life, you're not, you know, you're attacked just for being alive. So there are so many There's so many ways that they attack people even before you can get out the door to go on a march, for instance. And people who've come from South Africa have said it's much worse in Palestine. You don't even have those opportunities to try to do something like that. So there's
so
my
maybe
go ahead,
from
darling.
The outside, like as with
well,
the,
yes.
this boat voyage from Cyprus, the Israelis can't stop you from doing that, or at least it's going to be tough for them.
Well, we're prepared to be blockaded at sea for like 2 weeks.
Wow.
So.
Well, that would be an interesting kind of a standoff, and it would certainly be mediagenic. It's too bad they can't get Greenpeace with their Navy out there helping them.
Well,
we
invite anybody that wants to join us in the flotilla. So if there's any yachts out there that are on vacation and they want to come join us in the Mediterranean, we welcome them to come join us.
Well, that sounds like a plan. I wish I had a yacht in the Mediterranean so I could join you.
Yeah.
But, this is just a really exciting event. You know, ever since I just heard about this last spring, I've been hoping it would materialize, and I didn't realize it was this close. It's just coming up within a couple of weeks.
Right.
And I really hope the eyes of the world will be on you. Certainly all of our ears here at the Dynamic Duo Show on GCNLive.com and my other radio shows at BarrettForCongress.us will be listening to what you're putting out there. You're going to be in contact through the Internet from the boat.
Yes. And we're not going to have a live video stream 24 hours a day, but we will have some video streaming. I'm not sure how much of it will be, you know, live, though, because it looks like the satellite is very expensive, so I'm not sure how much we'll be on all the time. But we will have a satellite feed.
Okay, I'll plan on linking that at my website, BarrettForCongress.us, and, of course, it'll be coming to your website, which is FreeGaza.org.
All right.
And people can go there right now and learn
Absolutely.
More about this and participate in this historic project. I think we're getting close to the tipping point on Israel-Palestine, as we are with 9/11 Truth and various other things. And who knows what effort will be the one that finally pushes things into a new configuration, in this case, into a kind of a post-Zionist world where people can decide to live together on the basis of equality in a country where nobody is superior to anybody else.
Right.
Where everybody's allowed to coexist peacefully and to seek prosperity together, that's a real possibility in Palestine. I think Palestine could do it. Israel-Palestine could become something much more inspiring than post-apartheid South Africa.
Absolutely. Yeah, because apartheid still exists there economically.
Right.
In South Africa, so yeah.
Right. In Palestine, I think it would be easier because the Palestinian people are, of course, the entrepreneurs and intellectuals of the Arab world, and give them half a chance to work with the Jews in Israel-Palestine, and I think both groups would feed on each other very positively.
Absolutely.
And you'd end up with one of the most prosperous countries in that area. Well, I guess it already is. It's just not equally shared.
Right.
And it would be a great example to the world.
Right.